long could you live on a billboard over a busy highway? That's the question that three men set out to answer in 1982 as part of an AM radio contest at WSAN in Allentown, Pennsylvania. The winner would receive a mobile home, no small prize, for the recession-stricken area where unemployment was rampant and mortgage rates were a whopping 18%. What was expected to be a 30-day small-town stunt quickly morphed into a nearly year-long international phenomenon. And those are the liner notes from the back of Billboard Boys, Pursuing the American Dream, Three Went Up, and Wouldn't Come Down. This has been put together by a team of people, and today we have the director, Pat Taggart, with us for this edition of Lehigh Valley Art Salon to talk about creating this documentary for one of the most unusual things that ever happened in the Lehigh Valley. Pat Taggart is with us here at WDIY. Thanks for joining us today.
Neil, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so I think probably what we need to do is get a little background about you, because you took on an extremely unusual project, and so I think it might be good for us to learn a little bit more about you, about growing up, going to school, and then your interest in film and video. So tell me a little bit about yourself and where you come from.
So I can remember with my childhood friends when we were 8, 9 years old, our one buddy's dad had a video camera. And that was my introduction to making movies. Our Friday nights would be all to go over to this kid's house and pull out this old VHS camera and make movies, which were just terrible. But it's just the idea of being able to tell our own stories, as bad as they were, fascinated me. Grew up in Philadelphia, went to West Catholic High School, LaSalle University. But what really hooked me on movies, I wandered into Goodwill Hunting by accident. I was on a date. I was really interested in the girl. I didn't care what the movie was. And so we went to see Goodwill Hunting, and I was just so fascinated by the story. I'm not a guy that likes explosions, superhero movies. I love stories about people, real stories. And when I saw Goodwill Hunting the next day, I went out and bought a copybook and started handwriting scripts really, really poorly. But it kind of grew from there, and I've been bitten by this filmmaking bug, and it just never left me. So 20 years later, here I am.
So back in 1982-83, when this billboard contest was going on, this was before the internet, and this was a story that went internationally. I think we can use the term viral, even before the pre-internet days. This was a story that really went around the globe. And you decided that this was a project you had to tackle, and you put a team together to do it. So tell me about why this particular story was of interest to you, and tell me about the team that you put together to make this happen.
Absolutely. So, Neil, my wife was born and raised in the Valley, went to Bethlehem Catholic High School, and so we were up there visiting my in-laws for Christmas. We were about to leave, and I see my mother-in-law and father-in-law in the corner, and they're reading the Lehigh Valley Morning Call, and they are giggling and pointing and just reminiscing. And so I wandered over and said, "What are you talking about?" Here it was a 30-year retrospective article on the Billboard Boys, on the Billboard contest. And I read this thing and I was just hooked, because it goes back to the idea of loving stories about people. And I love quirky stories and I love comedy. But this story had everything. It was the drama. And so the first thing I did was I called Frank Pekka. Frank Pekka produces everything that I ever make. And I said, "Frank, I just heard the most amazing story. I need you to read this article." And so when you talk about the team that we put together, really it was a two-man show. And so I stepped aside and Frank went on this mission to just hunt down everyone that was ever associated with this. And he found so many people that were tied to this story that were so willing to speak after 30 years.
Well, that seems like an extraordinarily ambitious thing to do. And what kinds of hoops did he have to jump through to find people?
Oh, I mean, you know, he's a master. I mean, as much enjoyment I get out of telling the story from a creative standpoint, he gets a great deal of satisfaction about trying to find someone that can't be found. So the first thing was, two of the three men that lived up on the billboard are still with us. They're still alive. We had to meet with them and convince them that we weren't crazy. We didn't want to kidnap them. We just want to tell their story.
So and that was so, Dalton Young and
Ron Kissler.
And Ron Kissler.
Yeah, so we met them both at a restaurant different times, and just for a chance for them to get to know us and to see that our intentions were good. You know, when you set out to make documentaries, especially on the independent level, you don't expect to make a dollar off of them. Really, what you want to do is just tell a great story. And so I think that's the important thing that we had to sell them on was, hey, we're not in this for anything, any kind of financial gain. We just love this story and we want to tell it.
So that was the starting point to find two of the folks who were still around, yeah. That were actually on the billboard, and starting from there. And then after that, it seems like it rolled out into the entire organization that brought this about. That was AM 1470 WSAN, which had just changed, I believe, from a country format into they call it a music of your life format, which is like a 1950s, 40s, 1950s, slight swingish format for people who at the time were probably maybe in their 50s or 60s.
That's right. And it's a really odd contest to promote that format. So it works for country, right? I mean, you know, as someone says in the movie, Country Boy Will Survive. You can wake them up at 2 a.m. on the billboard, have them do jumping jacks. But the music, the Sinatra, the classy music, didn't really fit with the visual. So there was this real conflict going on at the radio station where some folks loved the promotion, and there was a new general manager who said, this doesn't work. I want to end the promotion.
Mm. So Frank caught up with the administrative staff of the radio station after you spoke with the Billboard boys.
Yeah, so they gave us names from the articles that we read. And, you know, one of the really cool things, Neil, was there's three wonderful articles written at the time, one in Rolling Stone magazine, one in Time magazine, in People magazine, and then, of course, the Wall Street Journal, which really kind of shot this thing off into the atmosphere. So what we thought was most documentaries have a narrator. And so you find out what you have in your story. How do we piece it all together? We'll use a narrator. Well, we said, we can't write anything better than what these three tremendous, tremendous writers wrote at the time. Why don't we find them? And they were in New York City, Atlanta, and North Carolina, respectively. Have them read their articles from 30 years ago and let that serve as the narrative backbone for the film.
Well, that's an interesting way to do it, because rather than setting them up with a whole bunch of questions, you just allowed them to reread what they had written, and then reminiscing came out of their mouths. It just came out.
Yeah, it's amazing. And really, the contest was, you know, 2-3 months in, and they really wanted to shut it down. Mm. So it started in September. They decided, hey, let's just bring these guys down on Christmas, give them all a mobile home. Because they've been up there now for 3 months. We only wanted to get a month out of it. We've gotten more than we bargained for. December 9th, this article gets released on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Now, this is about a small AM radio station in the Lehigh Valley. All of a sudden, it's front page news on the Wall Street Journal. And then literally overnight, boom, not only does everybody in the States know about it, but people all over the world know about this story.
I do remember seeing the People magazine article, and it was interesting to see your backyard represented in People magazine, because it wasn't something that you expected, and reading that, just going, God, well, there we are. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about the time period and what was going on and the effort to put this contest together. So we're talking about 1982.
Yeah,
we're talking about pretty difficult economic times. In the opening there, I read you know, the description that's on your DVD, where mortgage rates were at 18%. I mean, 18%. I think it's difficult today for people to fathom that, because we're now around 3.5-4%. And so, so let's talk a little bit about the context and these three men, their effort to get up on the contest.
Yeah. So, as you said, mortgage rates are 18%. This is really in the final days of Bethlehem Steel. And Mack Trucks had just left. I mean, so while the whole country was really hit hard, the Valley was hit especially hard. Hmm. You know, there was a lot of people looking for work, a lot of people looking for hope. So you have these three gentlemen, Mike McKay, Ron Kistler, and Dalton Young. So they hear this on the radio, and all three of them think, hey, this is an easy way to get a home. You know, it's an $18,000 mobile home. And so Mike is the only one that's married. Him and his wife are barely scraping by. And he said, very, very confident guy. Mm. He said, I can do this. There's nobody that can beat me at this. Mm. Ron Kistler had a steady girlfriend. He was an out-of-work truck driver. And so this seemed like as good an opportunity as any to get a home. Dalton Young was fresh out of the military. So he
right
got
out of the army, right?
Yes. Fresh out of the army. He walks through the front door. His mother doesn't even say hello. She says, hey, there's this contest. You got to join. And he said, oh, all right. I mean, I think he was... The consensus is that he was kind of trying to delay life and get a plan, and he thought, well, where else better to think about the next stage of my life than sitting up on a billboard, you know, beating a couple people who can't hang as long as I can.
That's kind of a zen attitude about it, I guess.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Hey, man, 30 feet over a highway, let me think about my life. And they all got way more than they bargained for.
So that's the sort of the economic background for this. The contest part of it, so the logistics of the contest, included a number of factors that sort of had to be figured in. So how do you get people to live on a billboard? So the documentary makes some comments about how that was set up, or actually the people who were up there talk about how they lived.
Yeah. So, hey, they got a tent. They had a radio, of course, and a phone, because the radio station wanted to talk back and forth with them. But they didn't send them meals. They had to get family members or friends to bring them food, which the contestants would lower a bucket. They would put the food in a bucket and bring it up. They couldn't come down from the board. I think that's what people don't understand. It's not like they showed up every morning at 9 o'clock and then at 5 o'clock they can go home. They literally lived on this billboard in North Face tents.
Yeah. I mean, some contests are like that where you get breaks.
Right.
Like, let's say if it's a dance contest, you know, 24, 48-hour dance contest, people get breaks. But they didn't have any breaks.
They didn't have any breaks. Yeah. They had to live up there. And they lived up there through the winter. They lived up there through the blizzard of 83, which is one of my first childhood memories. I think I was going on 4 years old. It's when I met one of my best friends. You know, his dad brought him down, and all the dads on the street built snow forts because we had 2 feet of snow.
I remember that. I lived on South 13th Street in Allentown, and I remember we decided to walk to Muhlenberg College to meet up with some friends, and we didn't recognize any of the streets. And the street signs were covered with snow, so you didn't know where you were. It was
disorienting.
I was so jealous
when I hear firsthand accounts of this time and of people that remember this contest, because I do love this story so much, and Frank Pekka does as well, and all of our stuff is secondhand.
Well, I think that more details about sort of the aftermath are something we can talk about in the next segment of Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm talking with Pat Taggart, director and also editor and creative person behind The Billboard Boys. It's a documentary about a 1982 contest held at WSAN 1470 AM in the Lehigh Valley on a billboard overlooking beautiful Route 22.
You know it.
We'll talk more about that contest and the effort to make this documentary come to life here on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
If you are a Golden Age folkie and love the music of Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, Joan Baez, and the Kingston Trio, WDIY is the place to be on Monday nights. From 7 to 9 p.m. on folk classics, all of that great music from the late 1940s to the late 60s will fill the airwaves, and we will welcome your ideas about the artists and songs you'd like to hear. Folk classics, Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. This is your host, Neil Heaver. I'm talking with Pat Taggart, director of Billboard Boys, which is a documentary about a contest gone awry in 1982, held by local AM radio station WSAN. Three men living on a billboard, not being able to get off that billboard, having to receive their meals from family members on a bucket lifted up from below. Just sounds like a bizarre idea, but it actually happened. And Pat's here to talk more about that. So we have these three individuals, and what you were able to extract from this story is three very different individual takes on the contest and the outcome it had and the effect on their family members. Let's talk about those three individuals and what you found out.
The variables were really the same. These guys went through the same exact life experience, but it affected them in three very, very different ways. And that was one of the main reasons I think Frank wanted to tell the story, and I wanted to tell the story as well. There's such a human element to it. You know, when you think about Dalton Young lived on this billboard for 6 months.
He's the fellow that came right out of the Army and went to the Billboard.
Lived on the Billboard for 6 months, fresh out of the Army, was trying to figure out his life, put all this time in there, and then he was removed. And this is the most sensational part of the story, of course. He was removed for selling marijuana from the Billboard to an undercover cop.
That's very strange and very complicated. It almost sounds like he was set up.
Well, you know, and we talked to folks in the movie, and we certainly didn't prompt them, but everyone said Dalton was set up. Dalton was set up. Even his rivals, I think Dalton was set up, you know. And so it was and it was difficult for me at the time because, you know, it's at a time where people were really pouncing on the police. And, you know, I have law enforcement in my family, but at the same time you're telling a documentary, you have to tell the truth.
Right.
And so I think that in this case, it was very clear that the contest had gone on long enough. There's traffic jams at Route 22 and MacArthur Road. People wanted the contest over with. And I think that this was the way to get it done. Hey, let's set up a drug bust and try to bring this thing to an end. So for Dalton Young, after 6 months, he walked away with nothing. I'm sorry, he walked away with a felony, Neil.
A felony.
A felony. He walked away with a felony. And so,
you know what? That's so, like, I think people today looking at a small amount of marijuana think that that's laughable.
Absolutely.
Given the current context, but that's what happened to him.
Well, President Reagan was in at the time, and he really cracked down on you know, the war on drugs, of course. But and especially marijuana, you know,
yeah.
and they really identified it as a major enemy. So Dalton walked away with nothing except a bad name. Mike McKay, who was the most flamboyant of the guys up on the board, who wanted it the most, he called himself Billboard Mike. He was one of the winners. And so Mike McKay and Ron Kistler eventually, after 261 days, were both brought down, not only given a mobile home, given a car, given vacations. I mean, these guys got more than what they bargained for. But for Mike, what Mike loved was the attention. Mike loved being Billboard Mike. So when the cameras went away, when no one was sticking microphones in Mike's face anymore, he could not assimilate back into a normal life. He wanted to tell that story forever, and no one was asking about it anymore.
That's strange that with all of the international attention,
yeah,
and then after this thing ended, that it just sort of disappeared for a while. It took retrospective newspaper articles to bring it back to people's attention. That's very odd.
I was stunned, Neil. I was completely stunned when I called Frank Peck and said, I found this amazing story. I hope no one's ever done anything significant on it because I want to tell this story so badly. And no one had.
No.
But it's a perfect story. Mm. It had everything. It had great characters. It had the economic backdrop. It has comedy. It has drama. And it's really about the pursuit of the American dream, which is a subject that so many people gravitate toward.
Own a home.
Own a home.
Have your own place you can call your own.
Yeah.
So you have these three different outcomes for these guys. Well, two of them were able to walk away with prizes, and I guess that was sort of a make good settlement, maybe.
Yeah.
How was that viewed?
Well, it became very apparent that these guys weren't coming down.
Mm.
Ron Kistler is very, very matter of fact. Go with the flow. He said, "Hey, I came up here to win a home. I'm not leaving until I win a home." And Mike McKay, the hubris, you know, he was just
Billboard
cocky
Mike.
And competitive. Billboard Mike said, "Well, you're not going to beat me." And so they made it very clear that, hey, you guys can leave us here for another 5 months or another 5 years. We're not coming down until you give us a home. At that point, there was so much public pressure to just give these guys a home. You know, stop it now. You've gotten your publicity. And by the way, WSAN, this was pre-internet. This was an AM radio station. They're not selling ads to all these reporters that were coming over from Germany and Japan and France. The signal didn't reach that far. So they weren't really benefiting financially from it anyway. At this point, it was time to say, okay, stunt's over. Give these guys a home.
And I would imagine, too, that potential advertisers at the time might have said, oh, you're the Billboard station? I don't want to take an ad out there.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
maybe that could have had a little backlash on them as well. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of people that are really stunned that they couldn't figure out a way to monetize this. You know? I mean, with all that attention today, you'd monetize it in a second with the internet.
And that's, I guess, a good point about Billboard Mike, his inability to sort of take this to another level for himself, you know, mm-hmm. where maybe today he would have been, you know, on talk shows. He could have shown up on, you know, with Seth Meyers or somebody and be on TV to talk about it.
But can you imagine he would be putting out 50 tweets a day while he was up there?
Well, and tweets, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sure. he would be an internet sensation before he ever stepped down, and he would have stepped into something else. It was right place, wrong time.
As somebody who worked on this documentary and really pulling from facts, I think that there's a certain appeal to the veracity of a real story.
Yeah.
You're not making it up. It's not fictionalized, but it seems awfully fantastic in a way. And as you dug into it, were there other surprises that came your way in the true story of this contest?
Oh, I mean, there was so much. There really was. We got way more than what we bargained for in a very, very positive way. You know, I mean, we didn't know about the April Fool stunt, for example, and I'll explain to the listeners what that was.
Oh, let's talk about that. I mean, that is a surprise.
Yes. I mean, they were what, 7 months in, and the one guy said, I'm coming down. And so hordes of media flock out to this billboard, and they get out there in the morning, and he's not there. Mike McKay's not there. You know, only Ron Kistler standing up on the board, and so everybody presumed he already came down. Contest is over.
Oh, and Dalton Young was already out because of his drug issue.
Exactly. Dalton Young's gone because of the drug bust. Everybody thought Mike McKay left, so they're ready to crown Ron Kistler the winner. Somebody climbs up the ladder, looks underneath his bed, Mike McKay, and he's hiding under his bed with all of his stuff around him, hoping that Ron would think, oh, he's gone, I'm going to climb down. He would have jumped out and said, I win. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You really can't.
So somebody finally realized, hey, what's the date?
Yes. And so somebody realized, oh, my gosh, it's April Fool's Day. Here's the biggest clown we have up on this billboard. And but, I mean, again, you can't script this stuff. You know, so there's all these really interesting vignettes. And I think one comment that people typically make after they see the story is, I didn't think it was going to be funny. I didn't realize there was going to be so many comedic elements. Mm. And that's just because it had nothing to do with us. It had everything to do with the fact that there's just tremendous storylines and characters here.
I viewed the documentary, and I also remember there was some question or dispute about official residence. Where were these? Did these guys have an official residence? And if so, what is the street number for Billboard?
Yeah.
That was an interesting aspect.
Ridiculousness. Yeah. So, first of all, when Dalton Young gets busted for drugs, they subpoena the other two guys and deliver the subpoenas to the Billboard. Okay, that's awesome. But what happened, you know, to Dalton Young was during the trial, they realized that, hey, recently they served him a $15 residency tax bill saying that the billboard was his home. And then they pointed out that they might have to evict him because it has no plumbing or smoke alarms. And then they said, hey, wait a minute. If you're saying this is his home, and then when they went up to pull him off the billboard and search his tent, they didn't have a warrant.
Oh.
So they didn't have a warrant to search what they called his home, which is completely insane and ridiculous and hilarious, and another reason why we just love this story.
Wow. Well, yeah, you just don't think of these things, and it's so complex.
Yes.
And I understand also that the Whitehall Police Department wasn't too happy with things going on up there either.
There was people
for other
partying.
Ridiculous reasons.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Partying at the billboard, and you know, I mean, people would just basically park on 22 and wave to these guys, and there's fender benders, and you know, a bus drove by at one point, and people start throwing six packs up on the billboard. I mean, so there's the ridiculousness, but at the same time, you know, the thing I love about it, Neil, the thing I really love about it is this was a tough time in the Lehigh Valley. You know, but these guys were such great representatives of the population here because people didn't hang their heads and quit. People fought. And these guys were fighters. These guys stood for something at a time where you needed some hope. And I think that these guys, even 35 years later, this resonates. You know, I mean, this is a story about hope. It's a story about not giving up. And it's a story about really fighting for what you want and what you believe in.
Well, it sounds like all three of them were trying to you know, establish a home for themselves.
Yeah.
And in the case of two of them, for their family members, for one was married, right?
One was married, newlywed.
Newlywed.
They were up. I think they were married for about 3 months, and then he wound up spending 9 months up. So
and which Billboard boy was that?
That was it was our boy Mike McKay.
Mike McKay.
Billboard Mike McKay
was just married.
That's right.
So boy, that's got to be difficult because I suppose here's another aspect of it that people would ask: was he allowed conjugal visits?
Two. He was allowed two. So they sent them up twice, and his ex-wife now, who's a wonderful person, she agreed to speak about the story.
Yeah.
And Linda said, you know, you had to be very, very careful with your movements up there because the billboard would vibrate through. So it wasn't exactly the ideal scenario.
Wow.
And it was, you know, it was windy and cold and everything else. But hey, you know.
That just shows great patience.
On
her part to
she was dealing with a headstrong man, Neil.
Yeah.
He wasn't coming down.
Well, folks now have an opportunity to see Billboard Boys. It's now on DVD.
It is.
I'm taking a look at it again. It looks like you've received a few awards for this. Let's cite those right now. Official selection for the Athens International Film Festival. You were selected for the Garden State Film Festival and also at Southside Film Festival here in Bethlehem.
That's right.
So those are nice little recognitions for the effort. Do you plan to put it out there in other places to see whether or not you know, it'll resonate elsewhere?
Absolutely, yeah. We stayed kind of local with a lot of our with our reach so far, and we really wanted to share it with the Valley. So we've had screenings at Steel Stacks and other facilities locally, but we really want to try to get the story out there because this is a Lehigh Valley story. It's a local story, but it's really a story that anybody can relate to. And so we're so excited now that the film's available. It's at billboardboys.com. You can find the trailer. You can find so much information about the story. There's DVDs available, and you can also stream it. So however you like to watch movies, it's available in that format.
Is it James Coonan?
Yes.
James Coonan from People Magazine writes a perfect story after viewing this. And Jeff Shear of Rolling Stone Magazine writes a stunt that represented a time.
I believe it is.
Billboard Boys. I want to say thank you to you, Pat Taggart, director of Billboard Boys, for being our guest today on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. It's a fascinating story. And could you just give that website one more time so folks who are interested can take a look?
Gladly. Billboardboys.com. And Neil, thank you so much for shining a light on the film.
You're quite welcome. This is Neil Heaver for Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of The Press.
Despicable Me 3 isn't so much despicable as bland. This time, Steve Carell gets to voice two characters of the film's title, the original Despicable Me, Gru, and now his twin brother, Gru. The saving grace in the third in the Despicable series, DM2 was released in 2012, and the original Despicable Me was released in 2010, are, of course, the Minions, those one and two goggle-eyed, blue-denim, bib-overall-wearing, yellow, vitamin-capsule-looking, nonsense-spouting characters. The Minions are more funny to look at, utilize as emojis in texting, and to purchase as toy statues to place on your office desk or as plush toy gifts for your children or nieces and nephews. In the movie theater, DM3 had my thoughts wandering and my mind wandering as to who might enjoy the 3D animated